Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedy is in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedy is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or ANJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremedyisinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of. If it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air, so long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. And there's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, so winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedies in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, thank you, Martin. I appreciate your giving us this disclaimer that everyone understands that we're having a good time. If you're looking for legal advice or financial advice, you just need to hang up because no one here is licensed in the state that you live in to give legal advice or financial advice. We have a first-time caller from, Lansing, Michigan. May I have your first name only, please? Ending in 7136, phone number ending in 7136. First name. You can make one up. I don't care.
Patrick.
Hello, Patrick. Welcome to the call. How'd you hear about us?
I heard about it from my brother.
When have you been able to trust your brother to give you good advice?
He reads a lot of this stuff, so.
Good. All right. Well, Patrick, buckle your seatbelt, buddy. I'm going to give you some court cases that ought to make you scratch the top of your noggin and go, something ain't right here. And you're right. There's something ain't right. So let's start. And then when you get do the shock and awe with you on some court cases, then we're going to turn the call over to PJ, and he's going to share with you how the solutions are there. U.S. versus Anthony, 24 Fed 829. This is 1873, right after the Civil War. Quote, the term resident and the term citizen of the United States is distinguished from, meaning it's different, than a citizen of one of the several states, in that the former is a special class of citizen created by Congress. Next. This is Cruikshank. Quote, we have, and this is 92 U.S. 542, years 1875. This is right after the Civil War. We have in our political system a government of the United States and a government of each of the several states. Each one of these governments is distinct from the others, and each has citizens of its own. McDonald versus the state. This is 1883. Quote, he was not a citizen of the United States. He was a citizen and voter of the state, end quote. And further into it, it says, quote, one may be a citizen of a state and yet not a citizen of the United States. This is Toshiro versus Jordan, 1927. That there is a citizenship of the United States and a citizenship of a state. Get the idea? Two governments. Two different governments, two different citizens, two different lands. This is Kitchens versus Steele. A citizen of the United States is a citizen of the federal government. Boo, hiss. Belmont versus Town of Gulfport. Taxpayers are not state citizens. What? I'd sure like to know what status the IRS thinks everybody is that's not in the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, or any of the other territories. This is State versus Manuel 20 NC 122. Quote, the term citizen, end quote, in the United States is analogous to the term subject in common law. The change of phrase has resulted from the change in government. So here they're recognizing that the government's changed somehow, which it did right after the Civil War. In the Supreme Court of the United States, Jones versus Temer, quote, the privileges, not the rights, it says the privileges and immunities clause of the 14th Amendment protects very few rights because it neither incorporates the Bill of Rights nor protects all rights of individual citizens. Instead, this provision protects only those rights peculiar to being a citizen of the federal government, and it does not protect those rights which relate to state citizenship. Supreme Court, U.S. versus Valentine. Ha, here we go. This is your right from the Congress. And it's one, only a single right. Quote, the only, that's singular, the only absolute and unqualified right of a United States citizen is to residence within the territorial boundaries of the United States. If you live in Georgia, is Georgia a territory? Is Nebraska a territory? Is Washington a territory? No. The state of Georgia is a territory. The state of Nebraska is a territory. The state of Washington is a territory. But Georgia, Nebraska, Washington, and the other 47 states, not so much. This is another crunch shake. The amendment, referring to the 14th, recognized that a individual can be a citizen of one of the several states without being a citizen of the United States. Okay, that was U.S. v. Anthony. We just said that. Or a citizen of the United States without being a citizen of a state. And that was from the Slaughterhouse case of Cruikshank. A more recent case is Cross versus Board of Supervisors, 1966. Quote, before both and after the 14th Amendment to the Federal Constitution, it has not been necessary for a person to be a citizen of the United States in order to be a citizen of his state. Again, that's Cruikshank. U.S. versus Slater. Unless the defendant can prove he is not a citizen of the United States, the IRS has the right to inquire and determine a tax liability. This is 1982. Now, what's it saying? First of all, they're putting the onus on you wanting you to prove a negative. But there's a way around this, and it's called correcting your status. Unless the defendant can prove he's not a citizen of the United States, how do you prove you're not a citizen of the United States? By affidavit. No big deal. That's 1982, not long ago. This is Gardena versus the Board of Registrars, Jefferson County, Alabama. Quote, there are, then, under our Republican form of government, two classes of people, one of the United States and one of the state. This is 1909. Colgate versus Harvey. The governments of the United States and of each state of the several states are distinct from one another. The rights of a citizen under one may be quite different from those which he has under the other. Duh. Madden versus Kentucky, 1940. Quote, rights of national citizenship as distinct from fundamental or natural rights inherent in state citizenship. Again, telling you those two different camps. Rustadt versus People. Quote, there is a difference between privileges and immunities belonging to the citizens of the United States as such and those belonging to the citizens of each state as such. That's 1900. Oh, you're going to love this one. You thought slavery was over? Uh-uh. Wheeling Steel Corporation versus Fox. Quote, therefore, the U.S. citizen, that's their federal citizen, that's how they have you listed in their accounting. A U.S. citizen residing in one of the states of the Union are classified as property and as franchises of the federal government as an individual entity. Hague versus CIO. Quote, the first eight amendments have uniformly been held not to be protected from state action by the Privileges and Immunity Clause. In other words, the 14th Amendment doesn't help you here at the state level. And also, this is where Article 7 of our Constitution comes in, where we can have state courts, county courts, etc., of our peers who are state citizens, citizens of the freely associated compact states. And then I'm going to close with this one. This is a bang-up one. This is Twining versus New Jersey. The right to trial by jury in civil cases, guaranteed by the 7th Amendment, and the right to bear arms, guaranteed by the 2nd Amendment, have been distinctly held not to be privileges and immunities of citizens of the United States guaranteed by the 14th Amendment. And in effect, the same decision was made in respect of the guarantee against prosecution, except by indictment of a grand jury contained in the 5th Amendment, and in respect to the right to be confronted with witnesses contained in the 6th Amendment. It was held that the indictment made indispensable by the 5th Amendment and trial by jury guaranteed by the 6th Amendment were not privileges and immunities of citizens of the United States, 14th Amendment citizens, federal citizens. As those words were used in the 14th Amendment, we conclude, therefore, that the exemption from compulsory self-incrimination is not a privilege or immunity of the federal citizenship guaranteed by this clause of the 14th Amendment. Oh, this is really good. I said I was going to close with the other one, but this one's here. You have a driver's license on you? Do you have a marriage license? Do you have a pilot's license, a doctor's license, whatever? Quote, this is Cargill versus the state of Minnesota. The acceptance of a license, in whatever form, will not impose upon the licensee an obligation to respect or to comply with any provision of the statute or with the regulations prescribed that are repugnant to the Constitution of the United States. So, anyways, there you are. I hope I've hit you across the head real hard with this, at least across the face, nice face slap, because you need to know this. You need to understand this. And now with PJ, he's going to share with you what he can do to make all this work for you. Go ahead, PJ.
Yeah, that last case law, or they don't really call it case law. They call it case opinion. Well, even more so, case opinion. It's a judge make an opinion as to the law, and basically the opinion carries power with it. It's not law, but it's an interpretation of the legislative law. But it talks about the go ahead and read that last one again. I know what I was getting at. Repugnant to the United States. So if you have a contract, or they're trying to enforce a contract that's repugnant to the United States Constitution, it's not a valid contract. So what our position is that if the, let's just say that you were a licensed doctor of some type, a finger doctor, a foot doctor, a surgeon, whatever, and it was a profession of your choosing. Okay, so you get educated, you get your education, and you get a license to practice. And you practice, and the United States agent walks up to you and says you have to pay a tax on the income generated from that license. Okay, so you had a vocation of your choosing. Now, where is your right to the proceeds of the vocation of your choosing no longer a right? If you have a right
to a vocation, how can the United States enter in and convert it into a non-right? That is. Now, I think there are situations where an activity is strictly a service and benefit and privilege of the United States. But the interesting thing that we're bringing into these IRS cases is that we're requiring the United States, the moving party, the plaintiff in the criminal case and the civil cases also, to produce the evidence that your activity was not that of a right. Extremely interesting. We're going to really put a lot of pressure on that in some of our cases. Another thing that Michael talked about is relationships with the United States, with relationships with the independent states, relationships with the nation, with various people. You ever hear the term God, family, and country? Michael, does that ring? Is that how it's said? God, family, and country? You remember when people would hear that occasionally? It's just kind of a patriotic statement. Michael might have stepped away from the phone for a while. But
God, took me a minute. Yes.
Yeah, God, country, and state. And I've seen shirts all my life with that. God, family, and country in that order. Now, we understand why God is first, because that's biblical. We understand why family is second, because there's certainly a tremendous amount of responsibility on the head of the household to protect them and provide for them. And then country. A lot of people, when they hear the word country, they envision what they proverbial name of the United States. You know, East Coast to West Coast, country, that's my country. But the word country actually comes from country man. It's your neighbor. Country man is your neighbor. So God, family, and country, your neighbor. So it doesn't, a lot of people, when they say those phrases, they're really still staying close to home with all three of them. That's quite interesting. And I believe that that is perfectly biblical. And there is a time when you venture far away to, you know, defend something or someone or something. You have to venture far away. But most of the time, you're actually fighting far away for the safety and security of the community that you live in. They're the ones that are going to be most thankful for your efforts, maybe overseas. The more I hear these case opinions that Michael reads off, the more I'm impressed with them. I hope to get them lined up on a spreadsheet and date each one of them and put the little line in the spreadsheet and the case, of course, the case law locator behind it. And I think they're quite fascinating, because it actually tells you that if you're standing in the middle of our country, which is generally called Nebraska or Iowa, let's just say Nebraska, and you're standing on land, that land you're standing on in Nebraska may be of the United States. It's unlikely, because only about 1.4 or 5% of the land in Nebraska, what we call Nebraska, is what we would identify as land of the United States. A lot of people call it a federal zone, which basically is a military land, a land that is set apart for the military. If you're in Omaha, Nebraska, I did research on it, and the federal courthouse was considered this type of land, and the IRS building across the way, I think it's about a 7-story building, was also of the United States. but nothing else of any significance that I found was of the United States. They owned a few lots, empty lots, and SAC Air Force Base was not even owned by the United States. It was leased land. I guarantee you that that land is has made some family very wealthy because it's, I'm sure they're charging a pretty penny for the use of that land. It's probably under a 90-year lease several times over. Or I think they call it a 99-year lease. So back to God, family, and country. That is where you need to focus, and that is where much of your rights can be established. The United States is not necessarily in the country part. They are not your countryman. They are not your neighbor. They are independent of you. The country is your neighbor. Obviously, you're very closely connected to them, but the United States is not your neighbor. So as you're standing on that land in Nebraska, you're going to be, there's a small chance you're going to be standing on land of Nebraska because it's only 1.4%. Now, the rest of the land is going to be Nebraska. It's not going to be the state of Nebraska. It's going to be Nebraska. State of Nebraska is synonymous with a federal zone. Nebraska is land that is not of a federal zone. So that's the remainder balance of that land in that area, and I would call that, at least the land close to me at that given time, the country, and which is associated with a country man. So that's your jurisdiction. That's your common law jurisdiction, your country, your fellow man, the people that are close to you. If you study the laws and historically, it talks about that you can be judged by your peers, your countrymen, your neighbor. It's all synonymous. Extremely interesting because the United States doesn't want you to know this. They want you to think that every time there's a major mishap that the United States, you got to drag it into the United States courts. Now the United States courts, thank you. They're bringing my meal here, my RV. Just set it right down there. Okay, thank you. So they want to govern the entire people of America under statism, which is the United States. And they can't do it constitutionally. They can only do it by deception. So if you're making that vocation that we talked about earlier, let's just say it's a foot doctor, and you're not on that land in Nebraska that is owned by the government, you can challenge the government to produce evidence that your choice of vocation, that doctor, is the proceeds from that is taxable by the United States, written law. That's what we're doing in court. It's quite complex. I'm trying to make it simple as possible because there's a lot more to it. We get U.S. Marshals involved. We get documents involved. We get the Secretary of State involved. And we're even working on, through Michael, a process to force the United States in conjunction with the IRS to give you a document to tell you the truth if you are a taxpayer or not. They have to tell you if you're a taxpayer or not. They cannot leave you hanging in jeopardy. By law, they have to do it. And if they don't want to do it, I believe we can sue them under common law principles because we can convince a jury that it's just wrong for them to leave you hanging and potentially subject to forfeiture, loss of all your wealth, and jail time. The people have never agreed to such an arrangement. And that's what the United States Title 26 application does. They bring it, they push it on you and they never explain how it is to be applied, how it ever became applied to you as a matter of law, which means we're in the Constitution. Is it enumerated that you're subject to that tax? Lots of people are subject to that tax. But where are you subject to that tax? If you're doing activity on their land, you're probably going to be subject to their tax. If you're not on their land, there's a very good chance that you're not subject to their written law taxes. So that's what we focus on a great deal in, or that's what I focus on a great deal in jurisdictional challenges. I work with individuals that combined with the people I work with and their victories, I think it's been close to 100 IRS cases that have been accuses, I think that's how you pronounce it, where the IRS just walked away because they don't want to take it to trial and have a case that shows up as a victory for the common man, because other people could read that same case and do the same thing and cost the United States, if it spread, billions of dollars. If you ever notice, the United States government is actually factually much larger than the Constitution was ever, the Founding Fathers ever dreamed of. And we can actually use that to our benefit, because they cannot reach out and take your wealth and govern you without your consent. So if you didn't consensually go onto their land and do business, you did not consensually enter into a relationship with them that is taxable, because you, the written law that they rely upon is taxable as to a person, as taxable as to a activity, and as taxable as to the location of land where that activity took place in, not on, in. It's a three-dimensional space. So, Michael, any questions popping up and any direction you want to take this presently?
All right. Let's start with press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. Press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. For those of you on Freedoms Radio, simply look to the center of your monitor. You'll see the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. If you look inside, it's empty. So why don't you left-click there and type away your comment or your question. On the outside of that rectangle, you'll see a place for you putting your contact information. Once doing that, done with that, then hit submit, and I'll see it on my end and be glad to give voice to your comment or your question. PJ brought up about the affidavit or the determination that can correct my status is what we're calling it. And I bought the domain name, www.correctmystatus.com. Right now, it'll take you to AmericanByBirth.com. I've had for a while, but haven't paid much attention to it for the programming side of it. We've been under a lot of different kinds of stresses to keep me away from that. Anyways, the point being is that the end result is, you know, a month or two process of correcting, after you've corrected your status, that the information providers, such as PJ, can use that as a leverage tool, not just a simple leverage tool, but it's a fulcrum. I mean, they can't stand against it. By placing this into the record, the court record, or, you know, even when you have your first interaction with a law enforcement officer, you just show them your card from the State Department of the United States. This is not made up. You get a card from the State Department of the United States. And when the officer takes that magnetic strip and he reads your that card from the State Department on his computer, it says, do not detain, do not investigate, release. Boom, you're out of there. No court, no traffic ticket, no anything ticket. What we're looking at is not just that, but we're looking at going into basically every student's case that's ever come across the desk, and opening it back up when, you know, some things failed. No, not everything worked. We had other information providers that we can go back and look into their work that or they're no longer here, but we can still open it back up. It's a case, and the people are still there with their cases. Here's what I've been telling everyone that I talk to that are members of your remedies in the law that reach out to me. One, if you are an existing student, you are invited to and encouraged with great passion to give your information provider the tools that he needs to give the outcome that we all want to have as quickly as possible. Change your status. And that's a done deal then. And then the second thing is, no new student coming aboard for PJ or any of the team to work with will be brought on board without them first having gone through the correction or the changing of their correcting their status, because that's the killer. I mean, as far as it's fatal to the government's position. And remember too, whether you're talking city, county, or state government, that's all under the United States Code terms for territories of the United States. Remember, we said Georgia is one of the states of the Union, freely associated compact states. But the state of Georgia, that's a federal territory. Anyways, first one to raise their hand. Oh, I'm looking forward to this. Kingfish, go ahead. This guy could be an information provider. Great. This guy could be an information provider all on his own.
Why, Kang?
Let her rip. Let her rip. What do you got to
say? I wanted to ask, I would like to ask about the revocation of election to be treated as a resident, and how effective is utilizing that provision in the IRC for revocation.
May I answer that, PJ? Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna add to it too. Go ahead, Michael.
All right. First off, the term resident is synonymous to a 14th Amendment citizen. The term resident, defined correctly, is that you are domiciled in Washington, D.C., but living amongst us in the freely associated compact states. That is a resident. You are a territorial citizen by definition. Revocation, BS, there is no revocation. Everything that you've done all your life has provided prima facie evidence that you are a United States citizen, you are a federal citizen, and all of your privileges that you have come from the Congress, not from the creator of the universe. The only way to get rid of the disparage nomenclature of resident to you is for you to correct your status. That's it. Bottom line. Excuse me.
Okay. So
let me add to that real quick before you. Revocation means that you were once in.
Correct.
If you weren't once in, there's nothing to revocate. There's nothing to remove. Okay, go ahead, Speaker.
Okay. So, like, for instance, as an example, if you went into the military and took the basically oath of office, and didn't you and you also filed a 1040 making an election to become a resident, wouldn't you want to reverse it?
Nope, because that was all predicated upon fraud.
Oh,
you had no idea.
Now you can join the military with full consent. If they gave you full disclosure, you could consensually join the military. And there's many cases of that. They might get paid well for it. They might have a 20-year program with them that they retire quite well. I have a friend that's retiring on it. I think it's close to a $200,000 retirement check. This is his pension. He's high up in the military. But a great many of the people that are pushed into a room and told to raise their right hand and take the oath of citizenship
have not been given full disclosure. They have not been told that that oath of office, I mean, you call it oath of office, but it's actually oath of service, your allegiance to the United States for a given time. They haven't been told that that is for U.S. persons, U.S. citizens. If you're a U.S. person, the only way you can become a U.S. citizen is by oath. Their written law clearly says there's only one way to become a U.S. citizen. It's not by birth. It's by oath. Oath is a type of contract. So when you go, if you're from Mexico, for example, you come in, you want citizenship with the United States, they're going to put you into a room and tell you to, eventually tell you to raise your right hand and take the oath of citizenship. And of course, they're going to have a whole lot of papers and other things to go with it. But the oath of citizenship has to be a part of that. So let's just say a war pops up and they call you up and you're 18 years old and they say, get down here and raise your right hand. You got to go to war. If you're a U.S. citizen, you have to do that. If you're not a U.S. citizen, you keep your hand down and keep your butt against the back wall and don't say a thing. They'll threaten you. I've had friends that have done this, or know of friends that have done this, and they watch these young men stay glued to the back wall, kept their hands down. They're getting threatened with court-martial for some time. Everybody else raised their hand. Off to Vietnam they went. Those guys went home. It's just amazing. So, The same thing with a driver's license. You get pulled over, and the cop ends up in court and says, Your Honor, he gave me a driver's license. And you can say, objection. Is there any evidence that I'm a person eligible or qualified to have a state driver's license? And if you have a brief in there accompanying that, it'll change the scenario of the hearing. The judge will want to get you out of there, quite likely will want to get you out of there as fast as possible, because even if you have a driver's license in your pocket, if you were not given full knowledge of full disclosure is what I was looking for. If you haven't been given full disclosure before you signed any document to receive that driver's license, you don't have a driver's license. Because guess what? A driver's license can only be issued to a U.S. citizen. Okay.
Right.
Says it right on the form. Are you a U.S. citizen? Check the box. Okay. Because that's who they can govern, as to travel on the land that they govern, as to travel. Same way with a marriage license. Your wife comes after you and wants to take half of everything you own and tries to get a U.S. judge to give it to you. As soon as she starts talking, Your Honor, is there any evidence in the record that I'm a person eligible or qualified to have a marriage license? If you weren't qualified and eligible to have a marriage license at the time that they claim to have given you a marriage license, you don't have a state marriage license. Therefore, the jurisdiction of the produce of your family and your earnings and all that defaults to common law. They don't want common law because they can't steal from you in common law very easily. They got to convince 12 people that are not U.S. citizens to give you your property. So it's everything. It's the same way with property tax, federal taxes, state taxes. You bring the same principle in. Right to bear arms. Where in your constitution am I barred from having a pistol on my car seat when you pulled me over? You know, they'll say, oh, you can't have a pistol, it's not registered. Or possibly you're a felon, you can't have a pistol in your car. Well, where in the Constitution am I not allowed to have a pistol? Well, you're a felon. Where in the Constitution am I not allowed to have firearm laying on the seat of my car. The judges don't know what. I have a friend that does that. The judges don't know what to say because they're looking at the prosecutor. Prosecutor, save me. Produce that evidence from the Constitution.
Kingfish.
Go ahead, and Michael.
When the cops told you to roll down the window, ask for your driver's license, proof of insurance, and registration, if instead you had handed him this card from the State Department of the United States and said something like, look, buddy, I know that there's a routine that you go through. It's a checklist off of a list that you have. But before you do anything, would you please just take this government-issued ID from the State Department of the United States and run that through that magnetic strip through your computer reader? And just do what it tells you.
Right.
Please. That's what
but yes, that's next on my.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that's next on my agenda for what I'm going to participate in is correcting the status. Number one.
Yep.
Uno.
What I was going to say is that. Did you know it's illegal for a United States agent to call you a taxpayer without factual evidence that you're a taxpayer? Why is that? Does anybody know the reason why they can't call you a taxpayer in the courtroom in front of the jury or even in front of the judge? Michael, you know the answer to that?
I got several answers.
Would they be testifying?
Well, it would prejudice you. Because they're putting false evidence on the record. They're making false statements against you before the court. It prejudices you. It puts you in a bad light. Anything that puts you in a bad light that's not factually supportable is prejudicial. So Michael's process that he's talking about here eliminates that right from the get-go. You can't call me a person that's required to have a state driver's license or registration, I should say, or plates on my car, or insurance. You don't have authority to do that to me. It's tremendous. It's just tremendous. Go ahead. You got another question?
I'll make a statement. I noticed that federal magistrates and judges like to slander the people who, you know, stand up for their rights by tagging them with the sovereign citizen coinage tag.
Exactly. Excuse me, Your Honor, could you please define for me and for the record the term, the nomenclature, quote, sovereign citizen, end quote. I don't know what that means. Can you please tell me? You're telling me I'm one, so I'd like to know what you're calling me.
Yes.
Yeah.
What evidence do you have that I'm a sovereign citizen? What's the term mean? I need the definition of the term. Yes, you can nail them to the wall on this stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah. The police, they do the same thing, and I'm starting to notice in commercial media now they're starting to use it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's a nationwide agenda to call certain people sovereign citizens. And it's nationwide. Every police department in the nation has had this curriculum.
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 Yeah. Don't ask me. All of them have the same book in their classrooms. Go ahead, Michael.
I was a guest of someone in their private appliance. As they were traveling from point A to point B, and this person hit them with their car, the officer that was there asked me for my identification. And I said, my identification? What probable cause do you have for asking me for my identification? He goes, well, you're here in the car when the accident took place. And I said, And that would rise to the level of probable cause? I don't think so. What probable cause do you have for asking? Finally says, well, just give me your name and your date of birth. I gave him my name, and I gave him my date of birth, even though I could have argued that point. And he came back about 20 minutes later and said, I can't find you in the system. And I said, you won't. I'm not a member of that country club. You're one of those sovereign citizens. And I asked him, would you please define for me what a sovereign citizen is? He couldn't. To somebody who thinks you're above the law. And I said, well, if you or your progenitors created the law, is the creation ever equal to or greater than its creator? Anyways, that was that. I had fun.
These guys are getting away with it's highway robbery is what they're doing. I travel all across the country. I recently traveled from Florida all the way to California. I only seen a couple cops pull people over that whole trip. I get into Nebraska and I drive 45 minutes on the main highway between Omaha, Nebraska and Lincoln, Nebraska. Five cop cars had people pulled over and given them tickets. Now, how is it I drive the entire nation, I only see two, and I spend 45 minutes on a road between Lincoln and Omaha, and I see five state patrols pulling people over and giving them tickets? They're highway robbery.
You're absolutely right. It is highway robbery, and that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
They're the highwaymen. And I'm not talking about Willie Nelson and his friends. Kingfish, any other questions?
That's it for me. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. I always get excited when I see that you've dialed in because you're going to have great questions, always. Miss Jennifer, how do you do?
Oh, there I am. How do you do?
No, you're not there. You're here.
I wish I was. I want to be patriotic, and so apparently the United States flag is part of the U.S. Corp. Is there a flag that is for
yes,
the U.S.?
Yes, ma'am, there is.
Which flag is for the U.S. National?
It's called the American Flag of Peace. The American Flag of Peace. Use your search engine. I'm doing that right now.
Okay.
AmericanFlag of Peace. Enter.
If you're going to use the term American National, you need to find the definition of it that you're going to use. You got to have that with it when you use that term. Go ahead, Michael.
I'm not using that term. I'm using the term citizen of one of the freely associated compact states.
Yeah.
I'll take a deep breath before I say it so I can get it all the way out. And the reason why I'm not saying just simply a state citizen is because in the United States Code, the United States has already said that a state, a county, a city is territory of the United States. I'm not going to give them that camel nose under the tent flap opportunity.
And that's why they want your address, because you're going to give them city, state, and county.
I'm sorry, sir. I don't have an address. I have a post location. Care of.
Isn't the affidavit of change of status that says I am a United States national, I am not a United States citizen?
Well, all I know is that worked for works for 13 years for GW, and I'm not going to mess with his paperwork on that. But if I ever have interaction between myself and government, I'll be saying, if asked, I'll be just saying a citizen of one of the freely associated compact states, nothing else.
You got to remember, GW was ready to give the definition of any term he used on that document. So that's what I mean. You've got to be prepared to give a definition. Go ahead, Michael.
Okay, then I want to know what the definition is of a United States national then.
If we use it in our documents, we'll have a definition for it. we probably will not use it. We'll probably use the evidence of some case opinions that, like Michael always recently quotes as to freely associated states, countrymen, they're associated. So we haven't decided exactly which term we'll use, but it's probably going to be exactly what Michael has used.
Which is going to sound weird.
It's going to sound odd, but that's we can't allow ourselves to use their terms because they got those terms perfected for the last 2,000 years to gain control over people deceptively. Romans used those terms.
Yeah, is that if any law enforcement or judge or anyone from government asks you point blank, are you a United States citizen? Well, excuse me, but before I can answer that, you need to stipulate which definition of United States are you in reference to. Just right there. Just stop right there. And see what they do, because there's three definitions. One confesses that you are the progeny of the founding fathers, and you are in co-sovereignty with others who are of the same nature, or you are, secondly, the definition of citizen, subject to the Congress, 14th Amendment, a slave, property, and the third is a citizen of one of the several states, the freely associated compact states, when your right communities come from the creator of the universe. So which one do you think I am, Mr. Policeman, or Your Honor?
And when you, as I was discussing earlier, when you talk about being associated with freely compact states, you're actually referring to your countrymen, your neighbor. That's the jurisdiction
exactly.
of where you actually live. So it's quite different than the United States, quite different.
Yeah. And Jennifer, the particular court case that you pointed out to me, Alaska translating from a territory into a country, into the United States, into the several states, it says right there it referred to the several states as independent countries, individual countries, and that's what we are. We're nation states. Florida is a nation state. New York is a
remember country. Country means countryman.
Right.
Your neighbor. Your neighbor. Very simple.
Yeah.
I don't mind. Biblically, you can be subject to your neighbor because your neighbor in a biblical country is subject to God's word. It's a good place to be.
All right. Any other questions, ladies and gentlemen? Jennifer.
I'm just a little confused then that this GW affidavit says American National, and
okay.
I guess we can talk about it later.
Yeah, we'll be tweaking.
On
we'll
Monday's
be tweaking
call.
That. We'll be tweaking that. We're talking with some high level legal minds. We'll be tweaking that document. So the definitions means everything on those things. So wait till we come out with the definition.
We were getting ready to say goodnight until Kingfish came back and Shelly right behind him. So let's go ahead and see what Kingfish has to say.
Yeah. One thing to take in consideration is when they put U.S. in front of something, that's usually the corporate side, whereas when you put United States on the end, it's usually the government.
Right.
So that may be something to take in consideration. You know, private American National is, you know, something that I prefer to use if I'm going to use that because I'm private, since I'm in trust, American National. But then you're using U.S. National, maybe National of the United States would probably be a good tweak.
Well, we'll see.
Well, the key is that they have to prove that they have a legal position to govern you. They have to produce that evidence. This document here that Michael's talking about says that it's been examined. They don't have, on the first base, that evidence. Now, you can do something in their jurisdiction where they're going to get jurisdiction over you. You go in there and rob a bank. You go in there and drive your car over a child and you're speeding. You're in big, big trouble. It doesn't make if you got this document in your back pocket or not. But generally, for just traveling without license or slightly going over the speed that they recommend that you go, or they suggest that you go. Those speed limits are suggestions. Every cop in the nation uses that suggestion and goes about twice that speed at times, and never gets a ticket. But anyway, you don't have to build a position of your status. This document actually shows that they have no claim to your status to link you to their written laws, to their governance.
Yeah,
you don't have
because
to produce
I
any.
Saw,
you don't have to. You don't. Yeah, you don't have to produce anything that you're governed by God. That's by default. But go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, the reason why I mention that is because I read in the paradigm shift of the government where they identified the district court as the district court of the United States, and then they changed it when it went 100% corporate to United States District Court.
Right.
And that's
right.
That's really identified in their
very likely.
For
yeah. Yep.
Right.
And it's
that's all I have.
It's quite often a friend of mine was in court and they stood up to prosecute this guy and the lawyer just stood up and says, "Your Honor, my client is not a member of your body politic of the plaintiff." And the judge goes, "Plaintiff, you have any evidence to produce to the contrary?" And they were just silent, and the judge just dismissed the case. Boom, right there. Next case. Everybody's there, it's like, what just happened? Anyway, go ahead, Michael. You got somebody else coming up on a question?
Yeah, our last caller tonight is Miss Shelley. Go ahead.
Hello, thank you. Thank you very much, Michael. I guess my question is pretty much redundant then, because I was going to ask about, the Social Security card, but you've already answered that. But my concern is once you correct your status, then it's a matter of not falling back under it again. How do you do that?
Well, it's not really correct your status. It's forcing them to tell the truth about your status. It's really, and that's hard to put in a sentence. That's why Michael has it the way it is. But you're requiring them to correct the official record they have on you, which is, if you're a U.S. person, it's going to say U.S. person on it. If you're not a U.S. person, they have to admit with this document that there's no evidence in their possession that you're a U.S. person, that you're a taxpayer, that you're a franchisee. One word was going to cover all that. It's called United States citizen. But it's not like you were in their system and now you're backing out of it. This document generally with most people shows that they have no evidence that you were ever in their system. Because there's only one way to get into their system, that's by consent.
Mm-hmm.
Now they do say that if you do a crime, it's a form of consent to be mm-hmm. in their jurisdiction, but that's usually not the case in most situations. You're going down to get a birth certificate, you're going down to get a Social Security card, you're going down to get a marriage license, you're going down to register your property that you just purchased in the county records for property taxes, things like that. Deception. This form can be used to probably stop all that stuff, all that hanky-panky.
Thank you. Well, I must admit, I am a progeny of the Founding Fathers? What kind of citizen is that?
you don't have to claim anything. They have to claim everything. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But this document Michael's talking about is a big step in the direction to send them running with their tail between their legs.
Well, I may say something. You know, I noticed you said you drive all over the place. You're lucky. I ride a bicycle and I get a ticket. But they recently dropped it for some mysterious reason.
Well, we can go back. If you get good at it, we might be able to teach you how to go back and get every single thing they've ever done to you in the past without law and get compensated for it.
Wow, thank you.
If I stole something from you 30 years ago, I still owe you that. I stole
That's
it
true.
From you.
You're right. You're right.
I still owe it. I owe it to you. God says I owe it to you. The jury will agree that I owe it to you. I owe it to you.
Thank you,
Michael.
Go
ahead. Yeah.
Okay.
Good question.
Raven is here, and we're going to bring her on board. But there's something that the Shelley just asked about being the progeny of our founders, et cetera. In the Dred Scott decision, it says in part, the words people of the United States and citizens are synonymous terms and mean the same thing. They both describe the political body who, according to our Republican institutions, form the sovereignty and who hold the power and conduct the government through their representatives. They are what we familiarly call sovereign people. And every citizen is one of these people and a constituent member of this sovereignty. It is true. Every person and every class and description of persons who were at the time of the adoption of the Constitution recognized as citizens in the several states became also citizens of this new political body, but none other. It was formed by them, for them, and their posterity, but for no one else. And the personal rights and privileges guaranteed to citizens of this new sovereignty were intended to embrace those only who were then members of the several state communities, or who should afterwards, by birthright or otherwise, a member according to the provisions of the constitutions and the principles upon which it was founded. It's saying right there, it's identifying the very first definition of the term United States. I've done my genealogy. And when I am processing my correct my status paperwork along with a handful of other people. And I added to that paperwork that everyone on the call is familiar with, I added declaration my birthright, rather, is what I meant to say. And I'm letting them know that I'm one of these two, and I've provided the evidence. So there are people who walk amongst us that, and I hate to use the word literally, but literally are above the law, because the Creator, and I enjoy that by birthright, the Creator is never equal to that which the Creator created, and that which the Creator created is never above the Creator that created it. So I am above the law of man's law. I stand under the law of the Creator's law. Now, somebody that came to the country, say, in 1810, that's pretty close to when our country was brand new. They're not these people, because they weren't there at that time, like it says in Dred Scott. They weren't there at that time. But they came in and were citizens of one of the freely associated compact states, one of the several states. So they still, they enjoyed natural rights, but they were subject to the constitution of those freely associated compact states. Do you understand? Did we lose you?
No, I'm here. PJ's here.
Shelly, you still there?
Yes, I was listening. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. I was asking, do you understand now the difference?
Yes, I was taking it all in. It's pretty.
Now you're from New York City, right?
Yes.
Were you born there?
Yes.
Your parents?
Yes, my mother.
Grandparents? Grandparents?
Yes.
Grandparents?
My grandmother's grandfather was the last veteran to get a pension with Washington. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was in New York.
You're
yeah.
one of those people. You joined me. You're joining with me. You're one of those people. You share sovereignty. So my plan is that when I have several people who have corrected their status, I will have a database, and I'm going to invite them to participate as grand jurors and adjudicate a matter. We'll hold our own court, and then whatever the decision is used, we will offer to have a foreign judgment registered or sent into the corporation. Anyways, this thing is so unimaginably grand. Anyway, I'm excited about it. If you get nothing else, Shelly. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Shelly.
No, thank you very much.
All right, Raven, take us home, please. I'm tired.
Good evening. Good evening, everyone. I do have a question. First, I just would like to share something in regards to, you know, the difficulties everyone was having with getting bank accounts for the religious trust. I happen to be blessed enough. I had divine favor and got one at Chase Bank because I later found out when I was trying to help someone to get one at Chase is that it has to go to the legal team. They cannot just do an account. It absolutely has to go to the legal team, and the person that I had that did my account was there for 21 years. She didn't know that they changed it. But anyway, I got a bank account, and the other person got denied because they basically said, in so many words, is they do not do religious trust bank accounts because they have no control over them. And
well, that's a First Amendment violation right there.
Yeah, that is on recording. So that's what they stated to the person. And then, so I'm having a problem with Chase getting a debit card because it's a business trust that does not have an owner. So I'm going back and forth with them to get a card. But the reason I share this is because when I went there today, I got to see some more of the screen, but I didn't see – it was like she was getting ready to leave. And basically, the questions they ask is, are you a U.S. citizen? And a bunch of other questions. So my question is, have you had anybody, after they set the record straight, to attempt to open a bank account? Because they're going to ask you, are you
a
U.S.
citizen?
That's
really a Saturday question with Bernie, Ren. That's really a Saturday question with Bernie. When they said, are you a U.S. citizen, again, please, Mr. Bank Teller or Mr. Vice President, Bank Vice President, would you please define for me in law what a United States citizen, what United States is?
Mm-hmm.
And are you telling me, after he gets through trying to hem and haw, are you trying to tell me that if someone is a citizen of one of the freely associated compact states, they cannot do business with you?
Well, it'll go to the legal team and get rejected.
Yeah. Anyways,
Anything else, Raven?
Thank you.
Nice topic.
I'm all set. Thank you. Good night. I appreciate everyone.
All right. I want to thank everyone for joining us this evening. Remind you that Saturday is Judge Bernie Beshear with regards to owning nothing but controlling everything. And Monday, of course, is the direct place to go to for talking about correcting your status with the State Department of the United States of America. We're going to go there, too. Same phone number and same PIN and same time for all calls. Until then, good night, everybody, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.